Hello everybody and welcome to episode 30 of All Your Base Podcast. I'm Cheese and Beans and you can find me on Twitter at Jimmy2Times. Now, normally, in the past, there had been a little voice piping up from up north talking about how this was Big D7719. As our Twitter followers will know, Dan decided to leave the show. He's got a few other things going on and wasn't able to continue. So, may I introduce to you Mr. Nefarian. How's it going, John?
Hello and hello, listeners.
So this show's going to be... Sorry, mate, go on.
Oh, well, I thought I'd make it all official, you know, rather than saying hello to you. It's a bit weird.
That's all good, man. I mean, I think listeners of the show will have heard me talk about... I'm going to call him Nefarian for now, but you will get to know him, as John. You've heard me sort of reference John on the show before, Nefarian on the show before. Been playing games with John for coming up to about a year, I think, probably when Destiny first came out.
Yeah, that was the that was when we met.
It was Mater, yeah.
Ironically,
yeah. I've sort of what we're going to do for this episode really is it's a bit of a Q&A. It's going to be good for you guys to get to know your new host. So that's really what we're going to do. We're going to be doing a bit of a Q&A, and we'll see how that goes. So, John, I've been thinking about a few questions, you know, sort of during the day. We just sort of talked about recording tonight, and. I know that when I first did the sort of first episode of this show, what I really wanted to get across was kind of my history in gaming, and I thought that would be a good idea to do with yourself, if that's all right. So let's go back to way back when, and if you'd like to tell the listeners, what was the first video game / computer game that you ever played?
The first video game that I ever played. Was actually probably an arcade game called 1942. I think it was made by Midway, and that was in the early 80s in my local arcade. And I used to play a lot of Gauntlet, if you remember the game.
I do remember the game, the top-down version. Again, I think I played it on the Commodore 64, I think, but yeah, go on.
I played it in the arcade. We had it at our college, along with another game called Arkanoid, which was like a bat and ball type thing.
Oh, okay.
A bit like kind of Brick Breaker. And I got hooked on... I tell you, it was around the same sort of time as games like Outrun and things like that came out. So, and Pole Position. I don't know if you remember that one.
I do, mate,
that was like a Formula One type game.
Yeah, the glory days of coin-op, man. I miss arcades, you know. I miss arcades.
Yeah, the original Star Wars that you sat inside and it was all line, you know, wasn't any textures, it was just all lines.
I never played it myself. It always looked a little bit too kind of complicated for me. I mean, just so the listeners know, I'm a little bit younger than John. But yeah. I mean,
well, about 20 years, isn't it?
I'm not too sure it's more that far, mate. But, I mean, some of these games, I mean, Outrun for me, absolute classic coin-op. I played it on the ST, the Amiga, and then sort of later on, you know, they brought out versions for the... not 360, I think it was the original Xbox, maybe. But, yeah, great game. And Gauntlet, man, I still have really fond memories of that game, you know, to this day. I know they brought out an updated version with it. Yeah. Was that just on Xbox Arcade, maybe?
They did do a reboot of it, but I don't...
Yeah.
I don't know how different it was from the original. I didn't actually play it, actually. I'd have to have a look. The problem with going retro now is it doesn't, while it's authentic in terms of graphics, obviously, like, your controls are all different. It's often emulated, and if you, like, run on a PC, you used to have to down-clock your PC because the computer was far too fast to be able to play it at a normal speed. Yeah. It would go, like, fast-forward. That's the only downside, but, you know, when you go, you know, I was playing games on emulators that we played years ago, and there's still some of the fresh gameplay experiences you can get, even though the graphics are a bit old.
Yeah, I think, you know, it really comes down to the sort of gameplay. Graphics, you know, I guess is what's kind of pleasing to the eye, but I think a lot of games that I used to play back in the day, although they don't have the kind of polish and, you know, the stuff that we're seeing on these next-gen consoles, a lot of the games from the Super Nintendo, for instance, for me, really still carry a bit of spit and polish. You know, they were never, it was kind of that kind of graphical style that Nintendo had back in the kind of mid-90s, early 90s. And I still think that holds up pretty well. You know, you see some games that are coming now onto, sort of a little thing there, Metal Slug, that's just come out on PlayStation Store. Well, not long ago, it's been out about a week or so now. But I mean, those graphics still hold up pretty well. I mean, okay, they're not kind of what you're looking at on, say, Destiny, for instance, or Far Cry 4, something like that. But it's still really playable, and you know, it's not making your eyes bleed, is it? I mean, it's playable.
Yeah, and the problem now is that while graphics has improved, I think in many ways gameplay has gone into a bit of decline in terms of, like, you know, ideas are kind of not original, you know, in terms of what they're doing. And it's a tricky one, because it's all down to what people like. But obviously people have got used to fancy graphics now, and they seem to care less about how good the gameplay is.
Yeah, I agree with you, mate. I do agree with you. I think it's eat, sleep, you know, rinse, repeat. It's what companies see sales and what people like. And it's just, you know, they slap a different colour of paint on it, and, you know, away we go again. Thanks for your 50 quid and wham bam, thank you, ma'am. But okay, yeah, we've gone sort of over that question there then, matey. So let's go on to, rather than games, let's look at consoles. And I mean, you know, I've been playing with you for, you know, say a little while now on PS4, and I do know that, you know, we do sort of share a few sort of different consoles. One thing I'd like to say, guys, you know, with having John on board, is that he's a true kind of cross-platform gamer. I know the sort of, you know, towards the sort of back end, that Dan had picked up a, you know, a Wii U and stuff, but John is proper, you know, all over it. He's, you know, we're talking PC, Xbox, Sony, and, you know, Nintendo. He ticks all the boxes. You know, any questions, by the way, you can, John, if you'd like to spit out your Twitter handle, matey, and I'm sure we can get some questions fired at you.
Yeah, my Twitter handle is Nefirion. That's Nephirion.
There you go, guys. So I guess you can get in touch with me, you know, via the show, obviously, as well, at AYB Podcast. But by all means, you know, fire some questions at him on Twitter as well. So yeah, I mean, I know that you've got, you know, as far as kind of current gen and sort of last gen, you know, in brackets, you know, consoles go, you're pretty well covered there, mate. But if we're talking back, you know, the kind of the history of kind of video games and consoles and games in the home, then if you could only pick, so we'll go Desert Island discs a little bit. Sorry, guys, I'm getting a bit tongue-tied. Desert Island discs a little bit. You can pick one console that's, you know, so far been made.
Yeah.
What would you pick, mate?
Oh, so it's a tear-up between the PS2. No, sorry, the PlayStation 1. The Xbox 360, because that was a beast of a console. If you go back to the PlayStation 1, you had games like the original Tomb Raider, Gran Turismo, Tekken, Resident Evil. That was a class bit of kit, and it was, you know, you had all your fighting games, so, you know, it was such an experience at the time. And the fact that they're remaking Resident Evil originals, you know, onto PC and onto the, you know, episodic as well, I mean, just is testament to how good those games were at the time.
Definitely, mate.
I really like the PS1. So I got confused with PS2 then, because we're on PS4 now. So the PS2 was okay, but the PS1 was the real thing. I mean, it was the most popular console, I believe, that Sony have made in terms of sales.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've sort of spoken about this before in that.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember when the PlayStation was launched, and I remember seeing quite a few kind of TV kind of interviews, exposés, whatever you want to sort of call them, things, you know, sort of things on the telly where they were talking to kind of clubbers that were kind of, you know, you were kind of out clubbing it, you know, during those years, that, you know, of its early release. And they were having these PlayStations in nightclubs. And when you've got games like Wipeout and the sort of soundtrack that they would have by kind of Orbital and, you know, people like that, it really kind of fitted into the culture at that time. And when you're talking about young people that were going out and, you know, spending money in clubs and stuff, these were guys that had sort of disposable incomes, and it really came along at the right time. It had the right sort of catalogue of games. It was targeted and marketed just to perfection. And I think that's probably, you know, another reason why, you know, why it did so well. But I mean, I agree. I really enjoyed the you know, the PS1. Some of my sort of fondest memories of gaming are on that system. So yeah, it was really, really good. What was your other one?
The other one was the Xbox 360.
Okay.
I don't know exactly about googling it how many titles were out for that console over the 10 year period it was out, or 8 years.
Yeah.
But just my first experience of playing Red Dead Redemption. Yeah. What else? Forza Motorsport, Gears of War. What else was there? Project Gotham Racing.
Oh yeah, I love that game, man.
All the Rare stuff, you know. The list is huge, and then obviously, you know, you had your ports like Street Fighter and everything else, but you know, that console was just, compared with the PS3 at the time, it was just, they were just ahead of the game.
I think a comparison to the PS3 is really good, John, in that at that time, Xbox with Xbox Live, you know, they'd had the live service going with the original Xbox. They were light years ahead of Sony with the PlayStation Network. And the functionality of that service, you know, it was absolutely spot on. I really loved playing online on my 360, and that pad as well for the 360. Although I would say that my favourite pad at the moment has got to be the DualShock 4. That pad for the 360 is right up there in my top three of game pads of all time. Really fantastic piece of kit.
Yeah, I think you might change your mind when you start using the new Xbox One pad for a while, because that is a very, very nice pad.
I like the design of it, but
I can't remember how much Microsoft spent on the ergonomic design of it, but they literally took everything that was great about the previous pad, the 360 pad, and then refined it. The biggest thing being the impulse triggers, vibration in the triggers.
Yeah.
That does actually really help in feedback when you're playing racing games and football or whatever you want to play. You know, just to give you that, it's almost like a very light, it's like a feather vibration. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to getting me hands on one. I've got absolute, we're sort of speaking earlier on in the week, guys, about the whole kind of Xbox One thing, and I mean, it's something that I've been sort of toying with the idea about for a little while. I think I need to just take the plunge and do it. The amount of games that I've got sitting there for the PS4 that just don't get played, because we all know what Cheese plays, and Cheese plays Destiny. So, you know, I don't need these games that are, you know, 40, 50, 60 quid at a time, taking up space on the shelf that I'm just never going to play. So, get them chopped in, and, you know, Robert's your mother's brother, Xbox One coming my way, you know, over the next kind of week or so. And I'm looking forward to hooking up with you on that as well, John. Is there any sort of games that you would recommend for me to, that they should be like essential purchases when I get the Xbox One?
Forza Horizon 2, yep. For definite. I wouldn't say Forza 5 now, because 6 is round the corner.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can grab Forza 5 as a bundle. Once 6 is released, you'll probably be able to pick it up for like 20 quid, digital download. It's a quality game, but it obviously is a launch title from 2013, so, you know, it's 2 years old now. But, I mean, it's still a great game. The Forza 5 doesn't have any sort of weather in the racing or anything. There's no night racing, anything like that, whereas obviously Forza 6 will do, because that was one of the criticisms of the game. But Forza Horizon is open world, and you know, you can drive off-road, and you can, it's set on an island like Malta or something similar, and you can just free roam around, go to different events, play online, meet up at car meets, you know, design your own car schemes, upgrade your cars, all that sort of stuff. It's really good. The only downside is it's the DLC is a little bit monetized, but I mean, you got roughly about, say, 150 cars before they start saying, do you want to buy a car pack?
Well, I'd say it's a pretty decent amount. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, how many cars do you need? You can only drive one at a time.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like,
But I mean, and also, I like as well, there's a really good community on it, you know. I mean, there's, put it this way, there's like, you can go up to like 700 in the rankings. So there's like 700 levels of progression. So there's loads, you don't feel like you're stuck at level 20 and that's it.
Yeah, you've got something to aspire to.
You know, you've got challenges, you've got, you know, beat your rivals, all that sort of stuff. It's a very, very good game, very polished. I'd say that one, and obviously the Halo collection, which you can pick up for around, I picked it up for £23, which is all the Halo
games.
They're all remastered.
Sorry, mate, go on.
I was just going to say, they're all remastered. Even Halo 1, it looks absolutely phenomenal, and that's it's the anniversary edition that they released as a separate game for like £40, I think.
Okay.
I mean, can you imagine how much content there is in 4 Halo games for 20 something quid? Plus all the multiplayer. And plus it's Bungie, obviously, who make Destiny your other favourite game. So I would have thought, Halo Master Chief is a no brainer. And the last thing I would say that is essential is the EA Access. Which is going to give you Madden, FIFA, Titanfall. Plants vs. Zombies, you know, Need for Speed, Rivals. Is it Rivals or Pursuit? I can't remember. But yeah, there's quite a few. And also, it gives you the Xbox previews. So you can play. I spoke to you earlier about this. You can play like the new McElroy PJ Golf game. I play, and you get a 10-hour demo of the full game.
Yeah,
I mean, it's nice because, you know, you like that, nice. That could save you £40 if you don't really like the game, and you've, you know, and then you think, oh well, I'll trade it in, but you know, straight away you've lost £20.
I mean, I got burned big time, you know, by Call of Duty, sort of the last one just gone on that. I owned it for like 3 days. And I wasn't really happy with that purchase at all. So yeah, a service like that for me would, you know, would be ideal. And as you pointed out, there's a couple of games straight off the bat there that, you know, that I would normally buy, and I do actually own on the PS4. So I could then probably trade those in from the PS4 and just, you know, put the money towards that service. And I'm kind of getting them for free, really. So yeah, I really like that. Sony just only need to really sort of, again, something else we spoke about kind of, you know, a bit earlier on. I agree with you completely. I think, you know, Xbox are making a massive, massive comeback. Sony did, as you put it earlier, you know, they really did kind of rest on their laurels a little bit. You know, they thought they were so far ahead. And then you've got Xbox coming back with this sort of backwards compatibility thing, which, looking at the back catalogue of 360 games, is going to be a massive, massive seller. Console seller for people, for Microsoft, you know. The people that have got these kind of massive collections of games, which they don't really want to trade in for a couple of quid at a time, you know, at CEX or game, they're going to become relevant again. They're going to be able to, you know, go back and play them, and, you know, get the gamer score, which maybe they didn't get like the first time round. And yeah, I think that's Xbox for me, they're really making a comeback.
I think they offer, I mean, it's the additional social features plus the, you know, like the things like backward compatibility, which, you know, I can understand that Sony don't want to do because it's to do with the sale processor, and it's really difficult, without going too technical, because it's a custom-made processor rather than an x86 processor, which is what in the PC and in the modern consoles. It's difficult for them to get that to work. They'd have to like rewrite all the code for every game. So it is a bit of a difficult one. But then, you know, Microsoft is saying, look, guys, you've bought all these games. They're in your library. They're digital as well as disc. You know, why don't we give you the opportunity to play them on your account without any additional cost? And I think that's such a marketing tool for pulling people into Xbox again, even if they just want to, they got a big 360 library and they just want to go back and play them, you know, on a much more powerful machine.
For me, that was definitely a deal breaker. I'm not a sort of person that would normally kind of double dip on games and stuff, and I really like my PS4, the console I play most. You know, Destiny with the sort of the exclusive content that it has, albeit that's going to be, you know, becoming, you know, available for Xbox users soon. PS4 is just, you know, was what I had my heart set on when I knew it was being released. I would also have been burned a little bit with the 360 and the kind of, you know, the red light of death situation, but yeah, I can forgive all that for what they're going to be giving. You're going to be getting a lot of bang for your buck, whereas before, you know, you needed to buy the Kinect version, and there were issues regarding that, and then, you know, with how just more powerful the Sony system was, and the games that were coming out for PlayStation, I really preferred to the launch title ones of the Xbox One. Now that both systems are kind of have found their feet, they've got their sort of hardcore gamers, you know, and they're kind of brand loyalty people. I kind of feel that I can justify having them both. The fact that one of those other little features as well, but for the Xbox, which, you know, I think is fantastic. I've yet to see it kind of running, but I've watched a couple of things on YouTube. But I think to see it kind of physically running would be more impressive. Would be that you can actually play your PlayStation through your Xbox, can't you? You'd be through your Xbox One. You can connect it through.
Yeah, you can. You can do that. Also, there is a little bit of a problem where it's I think a 50 hertz pass through on the Xbox. But I'm not sure if that's been patched. I've tried it and it works fine. Doesn't seem to make a lot of difference to me. I can think in games where you're going to definitely get 60 frames a second, but most games lock at 30, so it's not really a massive issue.
And even saying that, you know, there have been some issues with PS4 games, albeit you know, not so noticeable, but you know, to the trained eye, and certainly to commenters on kind of sorry yeah commentators should I say on YouTube, you know, they've sort of come down a little bit hard on some of them, you know, especially things like Bloodborne and stuff, where there is a slight drop in frame rate, you know, certain sort of boss battles and stuff like that. But you know, I think it's to be expected. What they're expecting these sort of machines to do, they are really still in their infancy, you know. They're not I've just pronounced that wrong, haven't I?
Yeah,
infancy. Does that sound
infancy.
Right?
Infancy.
There you go. Infancy. That, you know, it's going to take a bit of time before they perfect it. And, you know, I'm not making excuses for these companies. They spend a lot of money on you know, developing these games, and they've got, you know, X amount of people working for them. But I still think, you know, the best's definitely yet to come from these systems. And we're still sort of quite early on in their lifespans, and there'll be better things to come. So. Another question for you then, buddy, is looking forward to sort of the rest of the year and early kind of next year. Have you got any sort of titles that you really can't wait to get your hands on, that you kind of, you know, maybe seen some footage at a certain sort of games thing that was on recently, or is there anything you're really looking forward to playing, getting your hands on?
Is this apart from The Taken King?
This is apart from The Taken King. Guys, something you need to be aware of is that, you know, I'm a big Destiny fan. John is also a big Destiny fan.
Although I'm not as hardcore as I was, because I fell out with it a little bit.
Yeah, but that's something I've noticed, actually, that kind of, you sort of, you know, I'll see you playing other games and things like that, and it always draws me back. It always draws me back.
I think the problem for me was the omission of another raid.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, myself included, I think, you know, that for what we were paying for the DLC, I guess, I mean, I was kind of led to believe almost, you know, initially that was just going to be par for the course, that we were going to get one. We got it with the Dark Below. Obviously, it, you know, the Vault of Glass with the sort of Destiny, vanilla Destiny, or whatever you want to call it, 0.0, whatever. That it was going to, every sort of DLC that came out was going to include that raid. It's, you know, it's end game. It's what kind of, you know, you progress your character for, you get the better weapons, you level them up, so you can then go on and take on one of the big badass bosses. But it wasn't to be. They gave us, you know, they gave us the Trials of Osiris, they gave us the Prison of Elders, which, you know, are two, you know, they're two good game modes in their own, you know, in their own right. It's not something that we haven't seen before. I mean, you've got basically Skirmish, which, you know, Trials of Osiris is. And you know, you've got Horde mode in effect with the you know, the Prison of Elders. I still play both the you know, both of the modes. But I mean, how are you finding those? I know we spoke about it a little bit, but
I've only played Trials once or twice actually, and it was on the church map. I don't know what that one's called. Is it called the Widowmaker or something? I don't know. I found it. It's a little. It's as I actually said to one of my friends, I said it's a bit like a crap version of Search and Destroy, but yeah, without the destroy bit, you know, because like, you know, you've got to imagine a map with a gate in the middle, people snipe down the middle of the map, so they try and take you out without actually being able to see who's shooting at you. Yeah. And and then you've got a weapon called the Thorn, which basically is a hand pistol, mm-hmm, that has a damage over time effect once you've hit somebody with it. Yeah. And that is predominantly used just so people can hit somebody a couple of times and then go and hide while they wait for the damage over time to finish them off.
Pretty much, yeah. It's really OP in that game mode, and I think we spoke about this a bit earlier on about them, you know, the possibility of them nerfing that hand cannon. Everybody uses this weapon, and the thing is, if you don't use it, you know, you're gonna lose it. It is the predominant weapon there, and then you've got the likes of kind of your Ephrodite spear or your LDR with the final round, you know, your shotgun with kind of shot package, and you know, which is going to extend the range. But you know, basically everybody's running around with either a Foulwinter's Lie or a Matador 64 or something.
Let's be honest, a lot of these guns aren't that easy to get, and I mean you can tell the guys that are, I mean, you could get lucky,
yeah,
but to have the whole wide range of exotics and legendary weapons, you would have had to have probably been, you know, a pretty hardcore Vault of Glass and Crota guy to stand in with a chance of winning them, I would have thought.
Yeah, and you need to be quite lucky with the Nightfalls and things.
Yeah, which is, you'd have to be, you know, what I'm trying to say is you'd have to put time in to get that stuff.
Definitely.
You're not going to pop onto the server, do 10 minutes and get one of those weapons, which gives you a huge advantage over somebody.
It definitely does. I mean, the Trials of Osiris, I mean, that is hardcore, yeah, PvP sort of Destiny player right there. You know, if you go in there and you're not a level 34 and you don't have maxed out gear,
yeah,
you know, you're either going to need to be pretty heavily carried, or you know, all of you are going to be getting shipped out of there pretty damn quick. I would say it is an elite game mode. you know, it's difficult, but it's, you know, the going to Mercury part, the flawless victory thing, I mean, it is achievable. The Prison of Elders, on the other hand, I mean, excuse me, that ramps up the difficulty level sort of quite severely, really, in terms of bosses and stuff. So the level 28, again, we were talking about this earlier on, you can if you could, you know, go in there on your own, you could probably solo it. It's not particularly difficult. The 32, you know, steps up a little bit more, and the end boss, you know, is generally a little bit more tricky, takes a little bit more time to do than the 28. The 34 sort of carries on that trend, and then the 35 was Skolos. I mean, that dude is just bloody nails. I mean, I think I've beat him four or five times. Three of those were when they had him with like an elemental burn. So, you know, one week it would be solar damage, for instance, and then basically everyone had Galahorns, just nuke him, and you know, job's a good one. And then the following week it was void, and I think everybody then ran with corrective measure. And again, just able to absolutely obliterate him from distance. The third week was arc damage, where if you had the fourth horseman, basically you just kind of run up, blast him, you know, Titan pops a bubble up, you go in there, reload, you know, eat, sleep, rave, repeat, do it again. And I think a lot of people were complaining just about kind of the difficulty of that boss, and you know, don't get me wrong, it was not a walk in the park. I mean, I remember sitting there, in fact, over the sort of space of, I think, 2 days, I'd gone through and actually beat all the levels, got to sort of round 6 where you fight Skolos, and spent probably 3 or maybe even 4 hours a day in total trying to beat this son of a bitch, and I couldn't do it. Ended up quitting both times about 3 in the morning. I'd work the next day. Absolutely sucked, and I actually felt shite the next day, not just because I was tired, but because I'd been beaten, and I really didn't like that feeling. I really didn't like it. But since then, you know, they've dropped the elemental damage on him, they've dropped his health a little bit. It does make things a little bit easier, you know. It really is kind of that teamwork thing, very much kind of reminds me of that Vault of Glass sort of situation where it's all about the teamwork. And it's far more achievable now. It's more sort of accessible to, you know, to more people. I kind of felt at the time, all you know, well, he had the burn at least when I had the Galahorn for the solar round or the corrective measure, because I've got both of those guns maxed out. I was going to be in with a good chance of beating him. With the ARC one, my fourth horseman is not maxed out at all. I mean, other than this particular thing with Skolos, when he's got arc damage, the gun is a pile of shit, basically. I wouldn't run it in PvP. I certainly don't use it in PvE. It's got no distance on it whatsoever. It was only useful, you know, in that one sort of scenario, in that one instance. Now they've taken that out, you know, you can kind of mix and match with your guns a little bit more. It makes it more accessible for people that don't have, you know, all of the maxed out exotics, or, you know, people that may be missing one or two guns, or, you know, maybe even more. Yeah, it makes it so that even they're in with a chance of beating it on level 35. But in saying that, so sorry, mate. Back to that kind of original question. We've dealt with Destiny for now. In that, so is there anything that's kind of coming out? You know, there's been a lot of kind of trailers and stuff, you know, from E3, and I know that you know, we're both kind of avidly kind of looking to see what sort of the next sort of year, 12 months, 18 months, whatever brings, what's kind of coming up, what's sort of planned, what's on the calendar. Is there anything there that is you sort of thinking, do you know what, that's a game that I'm going to be buying on launch day?
I think I definitely will be getting the new Final Fantasy game. That's obviously not everyone's cup of tea, because it's quite, you know, it's Japanese RPG. So, but that's definitely on my list. What else was there? No Man's Sky on the PS4. I don't know if you've seen that, but yeah, it's all. It's for people that don't know. Basically, you fly around in a ship and you can land on different planets, and you can either fight your way around, so you can just kill all the animals, or you can be like researching them, so a bit of an explorer. And it's all procedurally generated, which means there's no actual level design. The game engine just basically creates random worlds similar to Minecraft. And it looks a very nice looking game. And it's not AAA. I think it's more going to be in the £20 price range, I believe.
I mean, for that, and what I've seen of it, at that price, you know, I'll be grabbing up. I think it's a bit of a no brainer. I've been burned a little bit in the past with these games, with these kind of random world generators. I mean, yeah. Minecraft.
Yeah.
I mean, Minecraft. I absolutely love it. You know, I've platinumed it on sort of two systems.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. Me, the kids, you know, mm-hmm. my dad, who's like 60 odd, he plays it.
I'm trying.
But you know, on the other hand,
this wasn't on the running order.
Which,
absolutely. This question,
you know,
so I'm
an elephant's cage.
I'm floundering a bit on being off the bat with it.
I think purchased on the PS4 to date, and one of the major kind of selling points by the developers for that game was the fact that, you know, you could play through it as many times as you want because the world would change. It didn't make it any better of a game, I'm afraid, guys. The game still reeks. But yeah, that game there, you know, No Man's Sky, looks really, really good. Triple A's, anything kind of Triple A that's screaming out of you? Star Wars. yeah, I know, yeah. Keep you on your toes, mate, keep you on your toes. That's all right, buddy. I mean, the reason I kind of bring it up is because, I mean, I've been looking at pre-ordering Star Wars, the Battlefront game. I mean, I've seen footage of it, and it just, if there's anything that's going to sort of take me off Destiny that I can, in the foreseeable future, for me, it's going to be this game. It just looks absolutely gorgeous.
It does look very good. The only thing that's put me off slightly is it seems quite tightly scripted. So, you know, the Hoth battle with the AT-STs marching across towards the bases. Enemy team can't actually pilot those. Those are just scripted, so they'll just go in the same line. Somebody who was in the alpha, because they recently had an alpha on PC, said that flying an X-Wing, it's a very small area to fly around in, so you end up doing circles. So I'm not sure if PC is the way forward, because it might be a bigger playable map area, but I'm not sure.
Okay, that's giving me food for thought. I mean, I'm really just kind of, I've been sent a couple of video clips by a friend of the show, Cannibal Ox. and you know, he's really into his Star Wars and stuff. He knows I am, and it got me drooling, really, really did.
I mean, it will be very good. But anyone that's played Battlefield 4, yeah. DICE messed up on that, and it was buggy for a year before they managed to sort it out. So hopefully they won't drop the ball with Star Wars. I mean, I can't think so because of the licensing behind it, so huge. And obviously Disney, who owns Star Wars, gave the team all the passes to go and look around the back of all LucasArts, and they've used all the original models and have taken photographs, and you know, they've had access to everything Star Wars. That's basically so, cool. So yeah, I mean, I think I can't be 100% sure, but I got a sneaky feeling that things like the X-Wing have actually been mapped by a computer from the original models, so they look really, really good.
Yeah.
The problem with that is, you know, console, you've got limited amount of memory, so you know, you're gonna have to trade off. If you're gonna have really high resolution textured models, then some of the scenery isn't going to be as great or as distant as you'd like it to be.
As you said, it is that sort of trade-off, isn't it? You know, if you want, I guess the kind of full experience, then PC, high-end sort of PC gaming is going to be the way to go with that.
Yeah, but you're looking at big money then.
Yeah, you are.
And also you're looking at whether they've built it as a PC experience from the ground up, or whether it's just a port from the console. Because, you know, okay, you can run it at, say, 4K, but you're not going to get a bigger draw distance if they've locked it down for console.
Yeah, so it's about weighing up those options.
Yeah, I mean, you look at GTA 5, I've got that on PC. Now, they spent an extra 12 months or longer just optimising it for PC because they had to do that extra work. Are DICE going to have time to do a multi-platform release all at once and do all that extra work? I doubt it. So I'm thinking it's just going to be, you know, it's going to be either locked at 30 frames a second on all formats, or they're just going to add a few shiny smoke features and things to PC, but not really be that much difference.
Well, I guess we'll have to, you know, hold our breaths and kind of wait and see. But it's for me, definitely early footage that I've seen. Really, really good. And the fact it's up there now, every time I sort of go onto the PlayStation store to look and see what's come out, or you know, what's in the pipeline, what's on sale or whatever, you know, it's there, and I'm just kind of, you know, I've popped it in my basket a couple of times. In fact, I think it's still there at the minute, actually. But yeah, I'm going to hold I'll hold fire a little bit. I did the same with Elder Scrolls.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why people rush to pre-order digital content.
Nah, that's it, yeah. I mean,
it's not like they're going to run out of stock. It's just a copy of a copy of a copy. I mean, they can make infinite copies of it, really, if they want to.
That way, you can go and flog it if you want. You know, you get bored of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Trade it in or whatever.
The last one, although this is going to sound a bit weird, but is actually Street Fighter V.
Nice.
Which I think that's penned it. I'm rubbish at Street Fighter, I'll be honest. But I just like the art style. I like the fact that it's an easy game to play, but it's very difficult to be very good at it. You know, and also the fact that it pays homage to the old games, but obviously they've improved the animations, everything else. I don't know, I've got a bit of an interest in FIFA 16. I'm hoping they'll do a brown paper bag edition, you know, to do with the bribery of FIFA officials, where you can bribe your way into the World Cup.
That'd be a nice little feature.
It would. You could have that as a DLC, I think.
Manager mode, you get to give backhands.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you can play as Qatar, and yeah. I'm not going to go into football because I don't know that much about it. I know a bit about football, but the whole Sterling situation is a travesty, I think.
It is. I mean, I just saw on Sky Sports News before we came on. I'm a big Liverpool fan, guys. I've probably mentioned that on the show before. I forget exactly what I've mentioned on the show before, but yeah, there's talk of him being lined up for a sale to Man City for 49 million. So, you know, we should be.
Did you happen to hear I think it was the BBC's interview with
I'll have to edit this bit because I can't remember his name. Steven Gerrard, yeah, Steven Gerrard, because he's playing for LA Galaxy now, I think. And he was saying what you think about, you know, Sterling, and he's going, I think it's a bad decision. And then he was saying this other guy that plays for Liverpool, who his name escapes me again. You'll have to help me, Jim. I think he's about 25. He was telling how professional that guy is, and basically he was having a dig, you know, a sideways dig at Sterling, saying that he's unprofessional and the decisions he's made, and he's had bad advice, blah blah blah. So it's a bit of a it was crafty. I could see he was making a point by praising another player and dissing another player at the same time. I was quite impressed by that.
Little jab in the ribs.
Yes, it was subtle.
Well, it makes no difference to me. I didn't sign him on my ultimate team this year anyway, so I won't be signing him next year either.
Well, I mean, the thing about Gerrard, as he did say, I can't say anything because it would just make headlines, you know, because of his you know, well-known name, blah, blah, blah. And obviously he will, it could influence some people at the club to turn on somebody, you know, whatever happens. You know, football's very about your relationship with other people, isn't it? So you have to, you try and be diplomatic, don't you, when you're a footballer, otherwise, because you never know who you're going to play for.
Yeah,
next.
That's true, man. I mean, you know, you know the summer and the January transfer window come around pretty quickly, and you know, you could be shipped off to Qatar, you know, or you know, the Far East or whatever to play. You know, before you know it. But FIFA 16, I'm kind of up in the air about that one. I had FIFA and Pro Evo this year. Preferred Pro Evo. I haven't got it anymore. I've still got FIFA, but I'm not really putting the hours into that I did on previous games. Probably just due to the fact that, you know, I'm playing Destiny all the time. But there you go.
I mean, the thing about, the only other thing is this will be the first year I can play the Legends on the Xbox One version.
That would be a reason for me to get it for, well, you know, obviously I'm going to get the Xbox, but one of the reasons for me to actually get it on the Xbox is the fact that you can be those Legends. For me, that was a massive, you know, Sony dropped the ball there big time by letting, you know, Microsoft kind of get that deal done without, you know, trying to intervene, or at least trying to get in on the action as well. I'd really love to be able to play as, you know, Robbie Fowler or Alan Shearer up for Pele, you know, all these, you know, I don't know, Maradona's, I'm not too sure, but Ruud Gullit, you know, all these kind of players from, you know, the 80s and 70s and 60s and stuff, and, you know, some from the 90s and that, you know, I'd really like to sort of build a team around them. What else have we got? There was something that I was looking at, and I can't think as actually what it was. I was going to mention something about that. Was what it was. So I've recently been looking to kind of expand on my handheld collection of catalogue of games or whatever, and I went out and bought Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate for the 3DS. Now this game, I'll tell you how it came about. My kids watch a lot of what's that channel called? Cartoon Network. And every other advert is for this bloody game, this Monster Hunter. So I'm thinking, okay, you know, it kind of looks half decent, sort of a bit for, sort of Final Fantasy-ish in the graphics style. We'll get it and give it a go. And so far, you know, I'm impressed with it. Have you played much of this game, John?
I do have it on a 3DS, and it was one of the reasons I repurchased a 3DS again. what happened was, is I traded in my 3DS for a PS Vita, and then I ended up buying a 3DS again because I missed it as soon as Sony announced that they're, you know, no longer actively supporting the Vita, I was very disappointed, and thought, you know, come on guys, you know, the Vita's a really, really good handheld. And you're just dumping it because you know, whatever, you don't think it's worth it, you know, to carry on making or trying to persuade people to make AAA titles for the Vita, or you know, and it's just been kind of resigned to a second screen almost, and obviously for playing indie titles, which you can get on the PC for less than a third of what they cost on the PSN. So yeah. I was a bit disappointed with that, you know, and yeah, loads of little niggling issues, you know, on the Vita that they never fix, you know, things like party chat and just little things that bug me that probably don't bug other people. You know, having that specific proprietary memory card that you had to pay something like one time it was nearly as much as 60 quid for a decent amount of memory for it. You know, they didn't have to do that when they designed it. They did that purely to make money, and I just don't agree with that. I mean, you know, you look at 3DS, you can stick just a standard SD card in it. You know, I don't know why Sony did that. You know, that's because they had come up with some really, really good ideas, but then they do something to just basically piss off all the customers of their stuff, you know, that they've already got.
Yeah, I
don't get it. I don't understand who said that was a good PR marketing decision to do that.
I bet he's been fired.
Well, you know, surely if you were a business, right, you'd want to make your product as widely available to people as possible. Look at Minecraft, for example. That has made Mr. Notch a tremendous amount of money. It's a very simple idea. It's accessible on every platform you can think of, and there's no restrictions on it. I mean, if you play it on your phone, you don't get a different experience to playing it on the PC. On, you know, apart from the mods on the PC, all the console versions are continually supported with free updates as well. So, I mean, that's the way to go forward. Not make close people off with specific buying specific memory cards and, you know, certain connectors and chargers and things like that. I mean, it's just all nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you'd have thought that they'd learned their lesson from the PSP, which, of course, you know, the Pro Duo cards. Although you could use sort of M2 cards if you plugged it into a
always leaving one more.
This is something that Sony have been doing, you know, for a while, and really they should have learned their lesson from, you know, from the PSP. But I am really enjoying that Monster Hunter game. I'll talk about it a bit more on a future show. We're up at about 47 minutes here, matey. Should we wrap this one up for now and leave them hanging?
I was just going to say we can, you know, in the future we'll you know, when our listeners send in their questions, we can choose a topic or go into a little bit more in depth some shows on different aspects of gaming. You know, it's really. It's not down to me to decide or Jim to decide. It's up to you guys what you want us to talk to, and we're here to entertain you, as it were.
That's it, man. We'd like to think of the, you know, you guys that are sort of taking your time to listen to the show. You are as active part of the team, you know, as we are. So you can get the questions in to us on Twitter at AYB Podcast. The email address is at aybpodcast@gmail.com. You can get questions to me on Twitter at Jimmy2Times and to John at... And there you go. So, guys, that was episode 30 of All Your Best Podcast. It's been nice. You know, me and John are talking about sort of doing a project together for a little while. It's been nice to... let's give... do you want to talk to the other show, matey?
I don't know if your listeners have listened to it, but you appeared on the Infinite Loot Cast, which is the other podcast, which is it's a different style to this show. It's a little bit longer. It covers a wide range of subjects. So if you've got time and you want to give it a listen, it's definitely an interesting show, and the guys do a great job on it. So I recommend that to you.
I'll be honest, mate. You know, it's been on my download list for a while. I've been lucky enough to, you know, appear on it, a couple of times. I really enjoy my time there. You guys really made me feel welcome. So check that out, guys. The Infinite Loop Cast. Right then. So week 30, but week one is the new and improved AYB Podcast. We'll catch you all next week.
Bye bye.